Welcome to the Readerly Report. Your hosts are Gail Weiswasser and Nicole Bonilla. We hope you will enjoy our candid book conversations, recommendations, and observations on the reading life. Thanks so much for joining us. Welcome to another edition of the Readerly Report. Today, Gail and I are excited to talk about spring books that we are looking forward to reading. Yeah, I think that's what we have. Gail, you know, I had made a note to ask you, how are you with Book of the Month? I know that you had kind of, you were kind of iffy on their selections and not feeling as satisfied as you had been in the past with it.
Yeah, that's a good question. I've managed to find, I think so far this year, I've probably skipped once at least. You know what? I'm going to open it up right now and tell you. I think I've probably skipped once. And then I also had, you know, I had like my, you get in January, you can pick a book of the book of the year. So mm-hmm. I got one, like an Abby Jimenez book. I've never read anything by her, but people seem to like her. So I just kind of grabbed it. And I don't know. I would say I've been like
picking reluctantly or.
Yeah, picking reluctantly. Although last month I got a memoir by Amy Lynn about grief. And I actually went and heard her read from it shortly after the book arrived. I haven't read it yet, but I heard her read and I definitely want to read it. It's definitely on my list. It's a memoir about the loss of her husband. And I was really interested in that one. So that was okay. So I don't know. It's my usual thing. I order them and then I never read them.
Okay.
Status quo.
Well, as long as everyone's happy with that.
Yeah. I mean, I've really told myself, like, unless I'm super excited about the book, just skip. There's no reason to get it out of obligation. It's not like the credit expires. It just, you know, it just moves to the next month. So like, I like seeing what is coming out. I learn about books that way. Although it is now March 31st and they have not announced the April books yet.
I guess they're really making you wait till either midnight or tomorrow morning this time.
I guess so. They have this weird like word scramble where you're supposed to like figure out what the book is by unscrambling the letters. Like it says, unscramble each word to reveal the first lines of some of our April picks.
Oh gosh.
City of Philadelphia wasn't what it claimed to be. Okay. I just got it. That's the first line of one of these books. But like this, I don't know, I guess it's supposed to hold you over. It used to be like the, you know, 3 or 4 days before the end of the month, you could see what it was.
Well, especially the day before.
Yeah. Are you having any FOMO or are you?
No.
Have you not looked back?
I have not looked back. I was just skipping too many things. And I got to a point where I was doing a clean out and it was just so many Book of the Month books. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, okay, so I'm clearly picking what seems to be best out of the choices.
Right.
As opposed to picking things I'm actually going to read.
Right. Last month, there were 6 books and two of them were thrillers. So that pretty much knocks it out for me. I mean, it just, unless like you highly recommend a thriller, like I'm probably not going to read an untested thriller. One of them was fantasy. That knocks that out for me. Then there was contemporary fiction, and it was by the woman who wrote Olga Dies Dreaming.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm going to butcher her last name, her first name, Cochetal. I don't know how to pronounce that. Gonzalez. Gonzalez I could do, but the first name is...
I always think it's Sochiel, but I'm not sure.
Okay. And I didn't love Olga Dies Dreaming, so I didn't pick that one. Then there was a book that I was actually intrigued by called Annie Bot, which is about a robot girlfriend's tumultuous coming of age, a gut-wrenching examination of modern romance, agency, and humanity. I think it's kind of like that. Did you ever see the movie Her?
Yeah.
Yeah, it reminded me of that. And so I was intrigued.
I think I have that on audio.
I have it on audio too. And so I was like, oh, well, I have it on audio. But then I didn't get it. And then the last one was that memoir by Amy Lynn called Hereafter. And that one appealed to me. So I just got that one.
So you're going to continue to monitor.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think if for no other reason, I'll keep this membership because for the bookstore, like it's just good to see what they're doing. And a lot of people subscribe to Book of the Month. And, hopefully all of these books will have been on my radar long before they come out in Book of the Month. But, I like to monitor the discussion and see what books people are picking when it comes to the end of the year and they do their big, vote for the Book of the Year. This is something I want to just be on top of. But, I'm certainly not relying on Book of the Month anymore to kind of vet stuff for me or to
curate
new authors that I haven't heard of or new books I haven't heard of. It's just
they seem to play it safe a lot. I feel like there's a lot of return authors. Mm-hmm. I think there used to be more one book in each category. Like, I don't remember them relying so heavily on thrillers.
Right.
And I feel like I see a fair amount of like Reese's Picks or book club, or books in that vein if they're not actual picks.
Right.
Like, could have been picked by Reese or Jenna or, whatever.
Yeah. It's become less literary. Like, sometimes there'll be like a thriller, a romance, a fantasy, then maybe a contemporary fiction, and then maybe a literary fiction. So that only leaves one literary fiction slot. And if I've already read it, or it doesn't appeal to me, or I have read the author and wasn't a big fan, like, or if I've gotten the book some other way, I'll pass.
Right.
I guess for me, it doesn't seem like there's any harm right now in keeping the subscription going.
Do you still follow the Indie Next list? Because you'll be eligible to vote.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. That'll be fun.
People will be trying to solicit Gail's vote.
How does that work?
They must have some kind of voting process in place that I'm sure that they put in for independent bookstores. I wonder if they link it to your software. I just know that when if I'm looking up books on Edelweiss or sometimes on Goodreads, you'll see, whatever the date is that they need you. It's usually a couple of months in advance too. So I would assume that you're probably going to get a lot more ARCs because the deadline is at least a couple of months before. It's not like...
And that's how they get those blurbs from indie bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, right?
Yet another thing to look forward to. Okay.
You're like, I'm in.
I'm in. So this is a big week for us where I'm hoping that by the end of this week we will know which of the two locations we're pursuing. And if it's one of them, we may even have a lease in hand. And we're still many months away from it opening, but I feel like once we have a lease that we can point to, we can start, a lot of other dominoes will start to fall. So that'll be kind of exciting.
Oh my gosh. So I'm on the Book of the Month site. Mm-hmm. And because I'm not reading it, this was a pet peeve of mine that I had a book that I was reading, but it's far enough away that hopefully no one can link it to this book and be spoiled. But my gosh, they have this book up and they have their good to know section where it's like multiple viewpoints, salacious, snarky. They have unreliable narrator. That is such a pet peeve of mine. Pet peeve of mine. Like, you're supposed to discover that. You're supposed to say, hey, is this telling the truth, or you believe it so much that when you get to the end of the story and then you can, but to tell someone up front that it's an unreliable narrator just drives me crazy. And it seems to be something that people feel okay saying. So that is my pet peeve that I've finally been able to release out into the world. I didn't want to do it when there was a book where someone had already spoiled that. So I wouldn't be spoiling it for anyone, but it drives me crazy.
I don't blame you. Unreliable narrator is like a part of the plot. Like, that's what helps you, that's
it. Yeah, you're not sure. It's a big part of, because most of the time, that's not something that you're supposed to know until sometimes midway the book, sometimes the end of the book. Mm-hmm. It's a lot like I have mixed feelings on people saying ambiguous ending, because I know how that snarls some people. Like, some people do not like to read books that have ambiguous endings, but that's also kind of a spoiler. I'm more okay with that because at least I don't know how it's going, in what way it's going to be ambiguous. But with an unreliable narrator, they're a liar. There's fishy things about the story that you are then looking for.
Right.
Totally. All right. Agree. And rant. All right. So what have you been reading? What have you been up to reading-wise, or has the bookstore stuff been all-consuming?
No, I've actually got two books I can discuss, which is very exciting.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So the first one is, and I've talked about it a little bit because I was reading it before, is Good Material by Dolly Alderton. I finally finished it.
Oh, is that good? Because my book club picked it for May.
Oh, yeah, it is good. I mean, it's not.
It seemed like there was a lot of dialogue, so I was thinking I might do it on audio. I hate reading pages and pages of dialogue.
Did I do that on audio? I did not. So I can't advise you. You know, there's something. I'm just going to say something about this book. There's something that I would consider a bit of a spoiler, but everybody has talked about it in their reviews.
Oh gosh,
it comes up in all the time. So should I say what it is? Like, I was a little bit like, okay. But maybe not.
I just went on my unreliable narrator rant. Okay. And I have to read it.
Right. Okay. I'm not going to say anything then. It's a mild spoiler. It's not as big a spoiler as unreliable narrator, but it just has something to do with the structure of the book. And I was sort of like, when I hit it, I was like, oh, interesting. But I had already known it was coming because it had been spoiled. Yeah. I think it's good. You did read Ghosts, right?
Mm-hmm.
By Dolly Alderton.
I did.
Yeah. I think I liked Ghosts better than this one, only because this is a lot of being in one person's head, and the person whose head you're in is,
you don't like him.
He's fine. He's just kind of immature. But like, what's nice about it is that it's you know, a breakup from a men's perspective, which we don't usually get. And
right.
Yeah, I mean, I like her writing. It's very easy and natural. And the dialogue that even you said, there's a lot of dialogue that didn't bother me because it felt very true. It wasn't like stilted or weird. It felt very accurate.
When I see pages and pages of dialogue with no narrative, I feel like I should just read a play.
Oh, well, maybe audio is the way to go. Do you know who narrates it?
No.
Okay.
But I'm going to look that up. I mean,
it's not like a lot happens in it, but I thought it was a pretty good book.
Okay. I think I'm definitely going to listen to it.
Okay. And then I read Piglet by Lottie Hazel. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. Hazell. You may have seen this book around. It has a huge cheeseburger on the cover.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah. So sound very dismissive.
I've read too many weird, like, these books that are trying to say something about food and people that have just been very, very strange that I'm just kind of like, oh, God.
Well, this one's not strange. It is about a woman in England living in Oxford with her fiance, and her name is Piglet, which is annoying. That's a nickname her family gave her growing up. And it's sort of a strange reason why she got that nickname. It's not just because she has a complicated relationship with food, but it's not like she's just a constant overeater. And her fiance, and this is, I'm not spoiling anything by saying this because you'll see this in any review of the book. Her fiance tells her 2 weeks before their wedding, he confides in her that he has betrayed her. We don't know what he did. We never find out exactly what he did, but
that's annoying.
Yeah. Although I've read that it's because the author wanted to focus on her as opposed to on him. And so it's about her decision whether or not to go through with this wedding. And she, you know, is she in this relationship for the right reasons? Like, is it because she's truly in love with this guy, or are there other things that are propelling her, and what's keeping her from calling it off? And, you know, she kind of goes down a little bit of a pit of despair, and food is involved. I think that the person who wrote it is a food writer or a food critic. So she writes about food, but she does it in a very literary way. So I don't actually like food writing. I don't like reading about food, but it didn't bother me.
Okay.
And I did this one on audio. And it's a train wreck. I mean, you're like watching this poor woman basically like derail. Her life gets completely derailed. But you're like, what would you do in that situation? And, you know, what do you think of the choices she's making? And like, what are you rooting for her to do? And, you know, how are the people around her helping or not helping? So it was good. I had read about that one, and I saw it in a bookstore when I was at the bookstore boot camp. It was like the day it came out. And so I grabbed it and bought it.
Okay, so that sounds good, not gross.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's not gross. I mean, the cover is kind of gross. It's like this big, juicy hamburger, like a double cheeseburger. But
I think the last book I read about women and food, it was about like this young college woman who was in these terrible, depressive relationships. She was so, so passive. And she starts like this underground food club with her friends where they just make and gluttonously eat all of this food as like a reaction to the patriarchy or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It would just end up with them having food fights and just.
Okay. That sounds a little weird.
It was chapter after chapter of that. So I was just like, no more food books, please.
I think this one's a little more mainstream than that.
One that's really well done is Crying in H Mart. So yes, good.
That's true. And there's a lot of food in there. But see, even that was almost too much food for me. I mean, I liked it. And obviously, the food was a huge part of her relationship with her mother and their life. And her mother's legacy to her was her, you know, cooking Korean food, right?
Was yep. Korean? I feel like that takes center stage in quite a few novels I've read where Asian cultures are featured, whether they're Chinese, Korean, like the relationship of food, feeding people, showing love and nurturing has been pretty strong.
Well, this one is England, so it's not.
Well, we know how their food is, so.
Right. So that's the books I finished, and I'm reading Leaving by Roxana Robinson, which is about man and a woman who dated in college and then went their separate ways, and then they meet up again like 30 years later, 40 years later. And the question is, do they get into a relationship again? She's divorced, he's married. So it's all about kind of the crossroads and choices they make after they meet again. And I'm liking that about a lot. I'm probably 3/4 of the way done. And I'm now just started After Annie by Anna Quinlan, which is about a woman who dies, and it's about the year that follows her sudden death told from the perspectives of her husband, her daughter, and her best friend.
Oh, I'm curious to see how you like that. I think we debated whether we had actually read any Anna Quinlan between us.
I don't think I have.
And came up with no. Or did I read Black and Blue? Was that her?
It was her.
I may have read that. All right.
What are you reading? What have you read?
I finished The New Couple in 5B by Lisa Unger. If you remember from a few years ago, I really loved her book Confessions on the 745. So this one is about New York real estate. It's about this young couple who, I think he's an actor. She has written a book. Her new book is due. So they're kind of in a precarious financial situation when her husband's uncle dies and leaves them a $5 million apartment, you know, in a doorman building, I think, on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and all the chaos that ensues. I think his daughter was expecting that she was going to leave the apartment. She was going to inherit the apartment, but they had a fraught relationship. And all of these really strange things are happening in the building. And she is writing about the building. Her new novel is focused on like strange disappearances and murders and eerie sightings that have happened in this building that she's researching. And there are parallel timelines to another woman who is married and kind of having an affair back in the day, and where all the chaos that leads to. So I think I enjoyed Confessions on the 745 a little bit better. This one got a little bit wild. I think it's trying to make to the point about how far people are willing to go for some prime Manhattan real estate figured heavily into the plot, but it was entertaining. I liked it. I listened to it on audio. I got it from Libro FM. Mm. I'm pretty sure it's out already.
I actually read Confessions on the 745. I think at your recommendation.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would steer you towards this one.
Okay.
I think Confessions on the 745 got thrillery towards the end, but it was a lot about relationships. And not that this one wasn't. I think this one has a little bit too much of the supernatural for you.
Oh, say no more.
Say less.
Right. Stop there.
So. Yeah, you can leave this one. I'm still listening to The Blueprint, which is taking me a long time. It's not a long audiobook to listen to. I think it's because the subject matter, like it's a really good book. It's The Blueprint by Ray Gianna Rashad. And it's kind of like a mix of Margaret Atwood, Handmaid's Tale with Octavia Butler Kindred. So it's about an alternate Texas or an alternate United States where Texas no longer exists. Like some parts of the country have seceded from the others. And like algorithms determine like the placement of where Black women are assigned to live and their spouse and their residence. And there's this one woman, Selene, who is married to someone who is high up. In fact, I think he created the algorithm that basically controls everyone's life. And she is writing about one of her ancestors, Henrietta, who was able to escape slavery while also just contemplating her own precarious situation because, you know, people don't like that she is treated as his wife. Higher ups think that is questionable. And I don't know, I think it's just hitting too close to just hearing the news about what Alabama was, how Alabama considers embryos like children now or something. Mm-hmm. So it's taking me a little bit longer to get through it, probably because it's not comfortably enough from the news cycle in the United States, unfortunately. But it's very good. Apocalyptic, dystopian. I would need it to be set a few hundred years in the future, but I think it's sort of now.
Hmm. Okay.
But you might like that, Gail. You like dystopia.
Sometimes.
I'm just trying to think, is there anything else? What else am I? I'm listening to something else, but I have to remind myself with audio. I'm always pleasantly surprised when I'm in the mood to listen to my audiobook, and then I look and I see what I'm actually listening to. Oh, The Good Half Gone by Taryn Fisher. And it's about a set of 15-year-old twins, and one of them goes missing and hasn't been seen for 10 years. She's presumed dead. Her sister has become... She's involved in some kind of psychiatric work that's going to require her to do a residency in a jail where she's hoping to get information on the disappearance of her sister. So I just started that one, so I don't have too much to report. And then I started this really old book. Well, not really old. I mean, it was written in 2005 by Martha Southgate, and it seems really, really promising. Like, I've read 3 pages. I love her writing. So I can't say too much about it now. It's a generational story, 3 generations of African-American women. And the youngest one has studied film in NYU and is basically looking to the past and trying to tell her mother and her grandmother stories, which basically pushes them into confronting, you know, difficult life choices they've had to make, difficult life circumstances. So I'm looking forward to reading that. And it is called Third Girl from the Left. I think it's a reference to her mother, who's an actress. And, you know, she always had these bit parts. So she'd be telling her daughter, oh, look, you know, I'm standing right behind this guy. So far, so good. Shall we get into spring?
Sure.
Spring books. So what was your methodology? Well, I was very strict with myself. I did 5, and I picked 5 that I... most likely, knowing me, knowing my latest moods and interests, would read, so that in 3 months, as we're heading into summer, maybe I will have read some, most, if not all of these books and can report back on them. So I've got a fantasy, I've got a couple of thrillers, I have a historical fiction retelling. I'm confident in my choices here.
Okay.
What about you? What you do?
I mean, I kind of did my usual. I did a bunch of research. I actually found one very good list that at the last, sort of towards the end, which yielded a bunch more.
I found that the lists were not good. I didn't find a lot of good lists.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just a weaker April.
Maybe.
Spring. Maybe people are holding their books for summer.
Also, The Millions didn't even have their preview out, which I was surprised by.
Yeah, I found a really good list on Bustle.
Hmm. I think they do pretty good book coverage.
Yeah, they do. I don't know. It's my usual like literary fiction relationship stuff. I mean, I think there's maybe one memoir.
Okay.
The rest of these are exactly the types of books you would expect me to pick.
Okay. Did you see that there was a new Lionel Shriver? Did that make your list?
You know, it's funny. I saw that there was, and I did not make my list because it looked weird.
I'll
have to go back and revisit what it was about. I just remember I glanced at it quickly and I was like, oh.
It's about like a friendship that blows up because of, I think it's a novel on cancel culture, how basically she lives in a world where people are penalized because they're too smart. Everyone has to be the same level of intelligence. So you can't call anyone stupid. I don't know. It was strange.
Well, that would be very in keeping with her.
So it just sounded, I don't know.
I think that's right. Alternative 2011, the mental parody movement takes hold. Americans now embrace the sacred universal truth that there is no such thing as variable human intelligence. Because everyone is equally smart, discrimination against purportedly dumb people is the last great civil rights fight. Test grades and employment qualifications are all discarded. Children are expelled for saying the S word, stupid, and encouraged to report parents who use it at home.
Oh, gosh.
So this is her probably rebellion against affirmative action. I don't know. Or against, like you said, cancel culture and wokeism. I guess so. I mean, she's always conservative.
I think it's just ventured too much into her novels, just the way they seem set up. I was looking at one review and someone, you know, basically said, just get off the soapbox. Like, we get it. We get it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they don't seem less like novels and more like screeds.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly been the case with some of her more recent stuff, like Big Brother. The one about aging, what was that called?
I don't remember that one.
That one was called, the one where the husband and wife decide that when they each hit 80, they're going to do assisted suicide so that they don't have to go through sort of mental and physical deterioration into their 80s. And each chapter is a different scenario of how it plays out.
Oh yeah. I kind of remember that. Did you read that one?
I did read that. It was actually really good. And I mean, you know, I'm a huge Lionel Shriver fan. It's a difficult book, but it was very good. And you know how she's very good at playing with alternate endings, kind of like what she did with The Post-Birthday World. Like, she's good at telling the same story with lots of different outcomes. And that is like the perfect structure for her to show that off. Mm-mm. And I did really like it. But this one, there's something like I looked at it and I didn't put it on my list today. Really unlike me. All right. Well, why don't you kick us off? I have a few more than five, but I can also just talk about some of them kind of quickly at the end.
All right. So I'll start off with a retelling. James, it's called James by Percival Everett. And Percival Everett he wrote a novel in 2001 that was satire, which means I didn't read it, called American Fiction, but I did see it. I did go and see it. So I don't think that when I've had this kind of on my radar for a while, and when I picked it out, I did not realize that, you know, he was the same guy who had done American Fiction, or the novel that American Fiction is based on, Erasure. So this is the historical fiction retelling of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. And it is revisionist in that it takes the point of view of, I think in Huckleberry Finn, he's Jim, but he's referred to by his name, James. So they say Everett's version allows us to see a more realistic, often brutal version of the pair's journey, all through the eyes of a fully realized Jim, a learned, discerning man with agency and ambition. I don't know if I've ever read the entire Huckleberry Finn. Maybe I've read pieces of it and like seen little snippets of the movies, but I was just definitely interested in this. And there's always kind of been controversy, I think, over the character of Jim and how he's portrayed and how much he knows. But with this one, supposedly Percival Everett is weaving in some of, I guess, the richer aspects of African American culture, including code switching, like how he appears to Huck and probably, you know, how he thinks in his own head and interacts with people he's more comfortable with. So I haven't read much historical fiction. I was kind of thinking about that the other day, how, you know, I can be so heavy into a genre or something, and then just all of a sudden, I just don't, like, have not read a lot of historical fiction lately. Hmm. So I'm getting back to it.
Apparently, he, Percival Everett, teaches at USC and is supposed to be an incredibly nice guy.
Oh.
He's like a beloved professor there. That's what my daughter reports back.
Oh, has she taken a class with him or just word around campus?
She hasn't, but that's his reputation and she wants to. And she's also, you know, is obsessed with the Oscars. So she was very excited about the adapted screenplay nom for American Fiction and They won.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I have to ask you about how you tracked, if you tracked. We'll save that for the end, but how the books did with Oscars.
Yeah. Well, there was lots of literary adaptations this year, and they did well. But, okay, we can save that for later.
So what's your first book?
So my first book, do you want to say when, that's out already, right?
Yes. It came out in March.
Okay. So if I'm going to stick to the ones that I'm the sort of the most excited about. All right. I'm going to start with this one called The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. And in this book, a woman returns home one night and is greeted at the door by her husband, but she's not married. She's never seen this man before in her life. But according to, you know, it's sort of one of these weird, like, alternative universe things. It looks like they've now, in this other reality, they've been together for a long time. So she tries to figure out how she can be married to this person. And then he goes up to the attic.
And someone different comes down.
Someone different comes out. In his place, a new man emerges and a new slightly alternate life reforms around her. So she's realizing that the attic is creating an infinite supply of husbands. So she wants to know, like,
that is
when,
like,
do you
stop?
Yeah. Like, when do you stop? When do you stop trying to do better than what, you know, is potentially down the road and sort of settle in with what you have? So it just sounds like kind of an intriguing, not quite time travel, but sort of like the Lionel Shriver, by the way, that book is called Should We Stay or Should We Go? Kind of like the alternate universes, multiple endings, different roads, road not taken, sliding doors-esque type of setup that I usually like.
So, I think I saw another one that was like sliding doors-esque. I think I have a copy of this somewhere, or maybe I have it on audio.
I may have it on audio. Yeah, maybe it was a Libro FM. I feel like I might have it too.
Since you're excited about it, hopefully you do read it and tell me how it is, because I'm kind of on the fence of whether I'll find that to be weird and annoying or if that'll be like endearing. Is she kind of serious with that? I'm not sure. Yeah. I have questions.
Yeah, understandably. All right, what do you have next?
All right.
It's April 2nd, but it's coming out this week.
Okay, so next up for me is one that won't come out until May 21st, so it's late spring. But I just talked about her quite a bit last week she was like the only book that I finished on vacation. Ruth Ware has one coming out, One Perfect Couple. And it's so funny because last show, you know, I was just talking about how she tends to write locked room mysteries, you know, like people are taken to a location and it's just them and there's no other way that than having a small group of people having been involved in something. So this one is called One Perfect Couple. It's about this woman who's like having struggles with her career. Her boyfriend decides to apply for a reality show, so she applies with him. And I think it's they go plus three other couples are on this island. And of course, things start to happen on the island. So it seems like it's a little bit of a... And Then There Were None takeoff by Agatha Christie, which is like, you know, the ultimate locked room mystery, people being on an island and starting to disappear. So I'm kind of excited to see how she's going to handle this and thrilled that she's stepping away from the spy world and hopefully it'll be like less action and more just kind of that suspenseful community secrets friendship vibe that she has too.
All right. My last book was called The Husbands, and my next book is called The Wives by Simone Guarindo. And this is in a microgenre that, Nicole, you and I both like a lot. This is actually a memoir, and it is about a woman who joins a community of army wives after leaving her New York City job.
Oh my gosh, army wives.
Yes. A profoundly intimate look at marriage, friendship, and the power of human connection. So this woman is uprooted from New York City, dropped into Columbus, Georgia, a town so foreign she might as well landed on the moon. Of course, her husband is deployed all the time and she has to find her place in this world. So I love books about military families, military relationships. It's just a world that I find really interesting. And this is a memoir, so it'll be, you know, real life. And it sounds like something I would really like.
Yes, I want to hear about that one when you're finished.
Yeah, April 9th.
Okay. So my next one, and it's out because I was in the bookstore admiring it the other day and said, no, you need to finish what you have on tap before you run out and get involved in something else.
Why would you forgo an opportunity to buy a new book just because you have 6,000 other ones?
Gail, I don't understand that. I'm getting older, getting more responsible, trying to change the wayward ways of my youth. So this one is about our boyfriend. I think it's like a loosely based on our boyfriend. It's Great Expectations, Vincent Cunningham. And it's a novel about this young man who becomes involved in the campaign of the first Black president. And it's like the 18 months when he's on the trail. You know, first he starts out, he's like very skeptical about this newcomer who is talking about hope and all these kinds of things that he doesn't think that a politician can run on. And he doesn't know if he will be able to, first of all, attain the presidency, and then if he has what it takes to, I guess, ensure the compromises that can sometimes be involved in politics. So they say it's a meditation on politics, politicians, religion, and preachers, fathers, and family. Great Expectations is both emotionally resonant coming-of-age story and original novel of ideas, marking the arrival of a major new writer. So that came out.
Is this fiction or nonfiction?
It's fiction.
Okay, so it's not actually about Obama.
No. I mean, it's, well, yes and no.
I mean, but this isn't about somebody who worked on Obama's campaign. Like, it's not a memoir written by someone who...
No, you know, I kept looking at this too. I'm just like, is this? But no, it's fiction.
Okay.
Yeah, it says it's a rich novel of ideas. So I'm hoping it's fiction. appears to be fiction.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's got this interesting cover because it looks like someone is out to sea.
Yeah, I saw
that. And like kind of on this little boat, and maybe there's sharks in the water.
I did see that cover.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So my next book is one that's written by an author that you and I have read, at least between the two of us, several of her books. So it's called Days of Wonder by Caroline Levitt. And I saw Caroline Levitt recently at Zibby Owen's book event. And she was there and she remembered me, which I thought was so sweet. I haven't talked to her in probably 15 years.
She is so sweet.
So sweet. And she immediately, I went up to her and said, you probably don't remember me. My name is Gail. I have a blog. Every day I write the book. She's like, oh my God, Gail, how are you? I'm like, I once did a book club on my book club for one of her books.
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway.
I don't remember which one it was. Is This Tomorrow? Cruel, Beautiful World?
Maybe. I think it was in Is This Tomorrow?
Yeah.
I don't think it was Cruel, Beautiful World. And she's super supportive of other authors, which is just, she's very sweet. Like, I was just seeing other authors interacting with her and she was giving them a lot of advice. They all seemed to know her. Like, it just was very nice. So she has a new book out, Days of Wonder, coming out the 23rd of April. And it's about a teenage girlfriend and boyfriend. And she gets accused of trying to murder his father. I don't know what the fact pattern is that leads to this. And she ends up getting imprisoned for it and learns that she's pregnant shortly after she gets this prison sentence and gives up the child. So 6 years later, she's released from prison even though she, I think, was sentenced to, had a longer sentence. And she's desperate to kind of get on with her life, but she is also wants to find out where her daughter is and try to get her daughter back. So she's trying to uncover the truth about where her daughter is, and then also try to figure out what happened with this murder. Or actually, it's an attempted murder. She didn't actually kill him. An attempted murder. So it has some, you know, interesting elements. Prison, this mystery part of it, and then trying to recover her daughter. So I just remember her writing always as being very empathic. Mm-hmm. Like she, I think, you know, some of her books worked better for me than other ones of her books did, but she always has these characters that are a little bit on the edge, like they're on the edge of a cult, or they're, you know, there's some big challenge that is changing their lives dramatically that they're then trying to come back from. So that's clearly the case here. But I really wanted to mention it because I just really like her as a person, and I like her writing, and I would like to read this. So that's Days of Wonder by Caroline Levitt.
I think we did. Did I participate in that book club maybe with you? Is this tomorrow? I feel like, oh yeah, the neighborhood boy goes missing.
You know what? I'm going to look at
Fatherless Children.
Figure out what it is. I don't think it was Cruel Beautiful World.
No.
Is This Tomorrow? Pictures of You, or With or Without You. Well, I've read a lot of her books. Is This Tomorrow? I mean, because it'll say in here if it was for a book club. No.
Maybe I had her on as a book club at one point.
That's possible. I feel like- oh, yeah. Maybe when you had your show.
Yep.
Yep. Let's see. Pictures of You. I have a feeling it was Pictures of You. Let me see. Yep. 2011, February, every day I write the book club pick was Pictures of You, about a fatal car accident. Yes. Changing the lives of two women escaping from their lives on Cape Cod.
Hmm.
I sort of remember that. And I'm pretty sure you did participate in this one. So this is at least one that you've read. The other ones, I think I just read on my own.
Yeah, I've read one more by her. But, oh, okay. That one sounds good.
Yeah. Okay, what's your next one?
Okay, so my next one, I didn't read his last book, which I'm going to attempt it on audio. Amor Towles has a book of fictions out, which means he has a book of short stories and one long novella that is referencing a character who is in his first novel, The Rules of Civility. And so he wrote A Gentleman in Moscow, which is now a series on Paramount Plus, which I really loved. Really loved Rules of Civility. I don't know. The Lincoln Highway was set in the U.S. It seemed like it was sort of a Western. I wasn't sure about that. But just reading about him revisiting Eve from his first novel and looking forward to some of these other short stories. I mean, it's a book of short stories, Gail, but it's like 400 pages long or something, 450 mm-hmm. pages. So I think his novella, he really gets into it. I have always loved his writing. So I'm so excited for this. This was a surprise. And I had not thought about him in a while. And that's just, you know, not to say anything negative about him. That's just because he takes quite a bit of time, you know, and puts, I guess, a lot of thought into, you know, what he's going to write. And he tries to write. I was reading this interview where he says he tries to write basically towards things that he is naturally interested in, as opposed to going out and researching. So even if he's researching, it's going to be, you know, his novels kind of like evolve in, oh yeah, I was really interested in reading Russian fiction and da 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 da. And so, very excited that he has a new book out. And he has an interesting story because he started out, I think he started out in a hedge fund. He was in finance and I guess left it behind when he was 40, I think, and started writing novels.
I just remember being at Book Expo and you were like, oh my God, Amor Towles. And I didn't know anything about him. And I guess it was after Gentleman in Moscow. And you were so excited and you made me come up and get his book. And I was like, oh, Nicole. And I had no idea. I still have yet to read any of his books and I obviously need to. But like, I had no idea with the phenomenon that he was when you were pushing me to go over and get his book.
Yeah. And I probably wanted you to, because I wouldn't have pushed you to get Lincoln Highway. So it must have been getting A Gentleman in Moscow. And it had to be, the other one was his debut. So it had to be, I was pushing you to get Gentleman in Moscow on the strength of Rules of Civility. And because it had taken him so long to write another one, it was just like, oh my gosh, right. I have to get this book. Right. The days when we went hunting for books.
I know. Oh, I miss it. Okay. So my next one, I'm going to skip a few here for various reasons. My next one comes out May 7th. It's called Women and Children First by Alina Grabowski. And it's about a town in Massachusetts, kind of a decaying coastal town, full of locals, and a young woman dies at a house party, and the circumstances around her death are very unclear. The whole community is shaken. And so you have all these different people who knew the woman, and the book is told through the eyes of 10 local women who tell this portrait of grief and a reminder of life's interconnectedness. So it doesn't sound like it's necessarily a mystery. It's more about you sort of get to the truth of what happened through all of these different perspectives. I think it's a debut. It says phenomenal new literary talent. So I think it's a debut. And I just, you know, I always enjoy books told from multiple perspectives. So this one sounds very good. The Women and Children First is the title.
All right. So next up on my list is we finally have some fantasy. And she's one of my favorite fantasy writers. Leigh Bardugo has a book coming out called The Familiar. And it's kind of interesting. I made that comment about historical fiction, and a lot of fantasy is not, or I haven't read a lot of fantasy that is historical. And, you know, I've been out of the historical fiction game for a little bit. So it's funny that this one is historical. I think it's set during the Inquisition, and it is about a woman who has magic, and she uses it to get her through her days. I guess she's a scullery maid or something, some job that's very undesirable back in the day. And then the people who employ her find out that she is able to do magic, and they make her use it so that they are able to kind of rise up the ranks in nobility. And of course, someone catches wind of the fact that she's able to do this magic. And so they're on the lookout for her because I think the King of Spain is looking for an advantage to use magic in his campaign against England. So she gets caught up in that intrigue. And then it's complicated by the fact that she is also Jewish. So in the midst of the Inquisitions, she wants to make sure that she stays clear of people who, you know, would cause her great harm. So she's in danger in more ways than one. It's like a story of magic and all about seeing how she makes it through. I'm really impressed that Leigh Bardugo has this particular book coming out, just because she's also in the middle of a series, which she's written two books for. So I'm pretty sure that the third book in the Hellbent series will probably be coming out soon. So she's very busy, kind of like Sarah J. Maas. I don't know, the fantasy novelists seem to have tremendous output.
I remember I tried to read one book by her once and I couldn't get it.
Ninth House. I think I tried to make you do it for book club.
I was like, Nicole, it's not going to happen. I couldn't do it. All right. Should I just do one more? I guess we're almost up at the hour already. So
yeah.
Okay. For my last one, I'm going to go back a little bit in time to a book coming out the end of April called Real Americans by Rachel Kong. And I've seen this book around a lot already, so it seems to be very well received.
Didn't she write the book about vitamin? Was it?
Yes, possibly. Goodbye, Vitamin.
Goodbye, Vitamin. Yes.
I think that may be the same person. So this is about, it takes place in 2000, Y2K. There's a 22-year-old woman named Lily, who's an intern at a media company, who meets a guy named Matthew. he is a native East Coaster and very wealthy, and they end up in a relationship together, fall in love. And then 10 years later, or sorry, 21 years later, 2021, a 15-year-old Nick Chen has never felt like he belonged on the isolated Washington Island where he lives with his single mother, Lily. So clearly she's now single. He can't shake the sense she's hiding someone. When he sets out to find his father, the journey threatens to raise more questions than it provides answers. So I think it's kind of about America and race and this, the last 20 years. And for everything I've read about this, it's supposed to be very good.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. So
I enjoyed her writing in Goodbye Vitamin. I think that the character was very passive, which I have such issues with in novels.
Right. I didn't read it.
All right. Sure. Okay. So now that you know what we're looking forward to with spring, Gail, why don't you take us through your Oscars? Did you have your Oscar party?
I didn't have a party, but I have a pool.
Okay. The pool. That's right.
So no, I'm way too serious about the Oscars to have a party because I don't want anyone talking. I just want to watch the whole thing. I thought the Oscars were great this year. I thought there were so many deserving nominees that it's not like it was, you know, a travesty that anybody won. Like they were all, like the people who won were all really good.
So no one was robbed.
No one was robbed. I mean, I think some people should have been nominated who weren't nominated, but.
Well, they were robbed earlier, so.
Right. I was very pleased to see that Anatomy of a Fall won for Best Original Screenplay because I thought the screenplay was fantastic. Just really, really well done.
Wait, Anatomy of a Fall?
Yeah, that was what won Best Original Screenplay. And that is about a couple that lives in kind of this remote village in France. And the husband falls out a window and dies. And the question is whether he was pushed or whether he killed himself.
Hmm.
And it's told, and the wife is on trial for his murder. And that's all I'll say. It's mostly in French, but there is a fair amount of English. So if you watch it, you'll see subtitles, but there's also a lot of English. It's very easy to follow along. It was really good. And that won Best Original Screenplay, and I thought that was well-deserved. And then American Fiction, I think, won Best Adapted Screenplay. And that was based on Erasure by Percival Everett, which you just talked about, and adapted. And I thought that was also a very good screenplay. But there were so many other screenplay nominees that I thought were very deserving, especially an adapted. Barbie was one of them. I think Oppenheimer was as well. I think that came from a biography. So I was like really happy with pretty much anyone who won. And it just seemed like there was a lot of high quality writing just in general. Oh, The Holdovers was nominated. That had good writing. It's just lots of movies with good writing seem to have been recognized this year.
Okay.
So I was quite pleased with it. I mean, to be honest, I didn't really make it through Oppenheimer. I tried and it got confusing and I didn't know what was going on. But I managed to see a fair number of the movies that were nominated. And I think it was a good year.
Did you see Barbie?
I did. I saw it twice.
Oh.
Once in the theater and once on an airplane.
Okay. So that's good. No.
You didn't see it? I think you should see it. It's a phenomenon. You kind of have to see it. No, just for Ryan Gosling. He's very dreamy. But it was really good. And I thought a lot of the movies I saw were really good. I thought.
So this was strong year.
Strong year. Strong year for like smart movies. Past Lives was great. Holdovers was good. I'm trying to think of what other movies I saw. Barbie.
Do you see your Oscar movies throughout the year or do you cram?
I end up mostly cramming because I just don't go to that many movies. But, you know, the cramming is like over the course of like 2 months. So it's not, you know, it's not too much.
Okay. I feel like I remember at one point you had a spreadsheet and.
Yeah, I probably did. And, I mean, I did watch a couple movies that last little stretch. I tried to watch Poor Things with my 11-year-old and that was really not a good idea because it's a very weird movie and I think it gets really sexual and we turned it off after like 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is that the Frankenstein one?
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, thanks for that recap.
Sure. All right. Well, I'm going to try to get my hands on some of these books that we talked about so that I can actually read them before we do a recap.
Right. Since we did five, we were reasonable this time. I mean, there have been shows where we've had like 15 books each or whatever.
Yeah, and, this was much
more and manageable. Listen, list them for the show and never think about them again. I always feel bad. Well, you have that second chance when they come out in paperback and it's like, oh, I meant to read this. This was on one of my lists and it's now out in paperback. And then after that,
then it's, that's too far gone.
So we are hopeful.
We're hopeful. This is more manageable. All right. Well, we will be back in a couple weeks with another show. And until then, happy reading.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of The Readerly Report. You can find all of our shows on iTunes or at thereaderlyreport.com. Please join our Facebook group, Readerly Report Readers, where you can talk to other listeners about the reading life. You can also find Nicole at nicolebonilla.com and me, Gail, at everydayiwritethebookblog.com. Finally, we'd love it if you left us a review on iTunes and told your book-loving friends about us. Thanks.